This is BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare, educational, and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host once again, Brian Moore. In this episode, I have a conversation with Jeff Sod and Jen Worley about the current and future state of design, with a focus on AI, data-driven design, the tools they use, and the tension between AI, efficiency, and creativity. Jeff Sod is a design principal with BSA. He graduated with a Bachelor of Architecture degree from the University of Detroit Mercy and has over 20 years of experience in healthcare architecture, focusing on creating spaces that enhance the well-being of patients and staff. Before joining BSA, Jeff was a regional director of healthcare for Baker Berrios. Prior to that, Jeff was a design director at Gensler and healthcare practice leader at Perkins & Will, as well as the director of design for the Midwest region at HKS. Jen Worley is an interior design principal and former director of interior design for BSA, a graduate of Ball State University with a bachelor's degree in psychological science, interior design, and environmental design. Jen has several designations, including EDAC, RID, CHID, and is a Lean Six Sigma Yellow Belt. Jen was previously on the show multiple times, episode 15, talking about the case for interior design as part of the planning process, and episode 39, discussing user experience design. Jen, Jeff, thanks for coming on to the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Definitely.
Well, Jen, I know you've been on the show before. Jeff, this is your first time, and I've really been looking forward to talking to you, hopefully about a different number of topics as your time with BSA continues. But since you first joined BSA in the middle of last year, I've been wanting to know, where does your passion for architecture and design come from? What are the things that you can remember from being young that might have, you know, foreshadowed your journey?
Oh, that's a good one. I was always into art and sort of drawing and sort of trying to figure things out. So really engaged in art early on in my life. So that was a big tie to it. And after high school, it was like, well, what are you going to do? And it's like, well, I want to draw. And my dad was like, try architecture. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So it's a quick story to get there, but being a family that none of my other family went to college, it was good to go to college and study architecture.
So that's awesome.
That's how I started.
And dad encouraging you, obviously, always a good thing, right? Instead of saying,
absolutely,
I want to draw. Yeah. All right. I know you both presented at Chicago Build just a few months ago in the fall, and I really wanted to have you on to kind of talk about this idea of AI, data, and the evolving design practice. So let's just start from, what was your key message to the audience?
For me, thinking through this age of AI and what does that mean for humans and humanity? You know, I feel like AI is a tool that we can use, but people are still the key. Person-to-person connection is more important than ever, and we have to lean into that, even though we're using these tools that can help us do things faster and maybe more efficiently.
I agree with Jen. It's really important to have a human in the loop because we are designer and planners, but really to help that journey and keep a human in, with the healthcare system, like, they're not asking any longer, like, what should we build? It's, what are your volumes? Where does your care slow down and why? What decisions delay discharge? It's asking different questions and putting a different lens on it, but having a human involved with it at all times is really important.
Yeah, and, that, and I know it's been a big topic of conversation just about how, you know, is AI going to take over everything? Or, you know, what is the role of humanity in all this? I did want to ask, what surprised you most that you might have heard from other speakers or attendees while you guys were there?
It goes back to, is AI taking your job rather than believing us to it's going to make us do the work that we love, mm-hmm, and take away the monotonous things that we don't love doing. So more time with the patient, less time with the EHR for doctors, physicians, and nurses. So that was a big surprise, but also what we tried to weave into it.
I think to just pile on to that a little bit, it was in all industries of construction and sustainability, and it's not just one facet. So it's really that multidisciplinary layer of everyone's trying to figure out how to do it and do it well while keeping that human impact intact.
And we're seeing a shift away from leading with imagery towards leading with data and information. So how's this changing your early project conversations with clients? And you both come from a different perspective, obviously, Jeff from a design principle perspective, and then Jen as an interior design principle.
I think imagery and data are becoming more linked. I like to think of it as a marriage almost between those two things and not one or the other. We do the imagery to get to the outcomes as part of a group package, so to mm-hmm. speak. So I think we're getting smarter and more efficient with the way we do early imaging, early visioning sessions. And that's really tied to some of those data-driven design decisions that will prove those outcomes to the client.
Interesting.
I think we're also looking at bringing different partners to the table with us, like startups that have bed optimization or OR tracking or ED tracking. And really, like, the most valuable design moves that we can do are invisible to patients, but can transform the operations. And that's where we're trying to meet them in between. So I think it's really, really cool time to change that conversation with them.
Yeah. And in those early conversations, Jeff, from an architectural standpoint, how does this impact schematic design?
Well, if BSA is a future AI disruptor, all our clients, and we have great clients, they're under such big, intense pressure.
Yeah.
They're asking us to help operational problems, financial problems, not just designing the building. So we're trying to lead in by bringing clarity earlier to the process. And this goal is simple: make better decisions earlier and communicate them more clearly for the client.
Yeah, across the board, like you were saying. Jen, how's this affect the interior design conceptualization and client presentations that you're doing?
I think it goes back to that making good decisions earlier on and helping the client through that using storytelling. I think that, the more we can weave experience and storytelling into some of those outcome-driven topics, it makes it more human, one, and it helps that client tell a story then when they're thinking through the project and we all can get aligned earlier around that idea.
Yeah, a lot of that is storytelling. I want to pivot and ask, so which tools have kind of generally changed how you think about design problems versus making existing processes faster, for example?
There are lots of tools out there that we can use to help us generate ideas faster, go through the process quicker. I think, being cautious about how we use those is an important thing because that design process still needs to happen, where there's that human exploration and the idea of designing for experience. But yeah, there's tools like Midjourney and tools like ChatGPT that we can use and we can iterate very quickly. But it doesn't always get us to where we want to go. It's a process as we're going through and learning how to use these things. And I know, Jeff, you've been into this more than I have with tools.
I really have embraced it since being at BSA and in working with Comfy UI, ChatGPT, Nano Banana, Finch, Sora, Xperia. And it's like, some people say I'm speaking a different language when I start to talk about it with them. But what we're really looking at is like from code analysis to construction documents, specifications, and like critical, like earlier in the process, like decisions are spread across like so many different platforms. And then we also validate after decisions are made. And then it leads to rework and clients' late changes and difficult conversations. So more using those tools to help set the direction. So it's not a talent issue. It's a tool and a process and integration use of how and when we're using them at BSA. So there might be a NASCAR filled with sort of different logos and ideas,
right?
But really how we package them, how we use them is going to be interesting in the future.
I know there's been a lot of talk about AI and empathy in design. And Jen, you and I have talked about empathy at a couple different points across this podcast when you've been on before. Can AI help us design more empathetically Or is that fundamentally a human capability?
It's an interesting question. I think it allows us more time to do those human things, which can lead to empathy. One of the concepts of when we presented at Chicago Build was really around the idea, and Jeff was talking about this a little bit, is that, you know, taking some of those repetitive tasks off a plate of an individual allows them to have more face-to-face time with a person. And that can really help somebody feel much more comfortable and comforted, especially in healthcare design. So I think, you know, if we think about our practice, there are, I think, some things that we will be able to take off our plate that are maybe more repetitive type tasks that let us lean into the idea of empathetic design and human-centered design, maybe in a way that we might have not had time to do before.
Okay. Jeff, what's your take on this?
I think at this time, no, but I think in the future it will, which is, I know, a little crazy to say, but I think today many people are using like classic form of AI, and what it does, it predicts to choose the next best action.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think generative AI will help us produce and create content, but in the future AI, it will perform like complete tasks for us, and it will be a system of still co-intelligence. The human's still involved, but it's going to be doing a lot more. So might get in trouble, but I think it might be able to do it.
You're preparing yourself in case AI does take over. They'll be like, that guy was friendly to us. He said we could be empathetic. Right?
Maybe so.
How do you balance data-driven insights with the intuitive human understanding of how people experience space?
It really, like, this time of technology-enabled care, where care is delivered by our apps, our watches, scanning methods, but how does that tie into like a healthcare system's Epic or MBAI for listening to talking in the room? And they look at all these different things of length of stay, admissions, and they want to be safe. The flow through a healthcare system right now is very complex, and there's a lot of changes, and that sort of from radiology to labs to who's cleaning the room to get the next bed ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that path tied to human experience is poor. So what I'm looking at is like almost a Google map for healthcare. So you have a place you're coming to, you have a destination, and Google really will show you the best route.
Right.
If something happens during that trip, an accident, or something doesn't work, like in a healthcare system, it reroutes you. So that rerouting idea of happening in real time could be super interesting, but healthcare communication doesn't work like that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that sort of can help experience space, but also that method of going through the space yet.
That's right. Interesting. What a great analogy. And Jen, we've talked about journey mapping before, which is not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this mapping concept, I understand it, that makes a lot of sense.
One thing I think is an opportunity is for us to really explore how some of the non-revenue generating space attribute to or contribute to the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of talk about wasted space. We want to be very efficient and very tight with all of our tolerances and square footages and things. But there are parts of that experience along the path that do make a difference for people. And I think it's important for us to be able to validate to the client that those are important. And as we continue to look at AI and how that can be tracked, I think there's some opportunity there for us to look at that in a more quantitative way than qualitative.
Jeff, you've talked about some of these AI tools, and as they become more sophisticated, how do you maintain your design authenticity and the BSA perspective in your work? Is there any sort of tension between efficiency and creativity?
Well, I don't want there to be, because my AI agent's going to help me get there.
Right.
But like confidence early to the right size solutions before designing momentum sets in, we want to look at trade-offs of what changes cost, saves, and risk, and transparency, who made the decision and why. A lot of times that gets lost in it. And we want clarity over complexity, like our diagrams, dashboards, rather than like explanations, you know, like show, give them something, and BSA can really lead the conversations to reduce that uncertainty and help clients make defensible decisions that were woven into our process.
Yeah.
So that's really the sweet spot of what I think efficiency, creativity, but it's having the good information to be able to do it.
Interesting. So I don't know about you guys. The first time I heard about AI was probably a little over 3 years ago, right? Now it's been around a lot longer than that, of course, but just in the everyday nomenclature in society, if you will, and people actually starting to use things like ChatGPT. So my question to both of you is, how are you thinking differently about projects now compared to when this kind of first became, you know, in the stratosphere, if you will?
So for me, if I think about my last project and what I did differently, thinking through, I do a lot of alignment and visioning sessions and really using those tools to help us iterate through ideas faster. So we collect a lot of data when we do those exercises, and having the ability to synthesize that in a quick way so that we can start thinking through design concepts has really been helpful. And I know it's saved a lot of time on our end, but it can also help us think through, you know, what is the next thing we should do, to Jeff's point, that next decision that we need to make, and it can prompt us. So I think thinking through that in a different lens is what I've been really looking at.
It's not as much of a shadow AI now than it was 3 years ago.
Right, right.
Because I think there's a lot of shadow AI going in through every organization. We really don't know how people are really using it throughout the system.
Yep.
But how I look at it, AI is a really connected system. What we're doing from code review, site planning, developing multiple options, demand forecasting, space programming. And like, I even want to tie it like into a blockchain to track changes. So we really know what happened in these programming meetings and other events, that there's always this most friction with area and programs in my career. So really having a responsible way to do that. And then it can tie into storytelling as well.
Sure.
And to all be done in one place, that's sort of what we're getting closer to. But it's very different from 3 years ago, for sure.
I mean, to your point, obviously from a marketing standpoint, trying to take the things that you guys are doing and be a little more elaborate with our storytelling and talk about some of this, it's just, it's been pretty revolutionary for groups like us. I think I've got the right two people to ask this question to here. How is the relationship between architecture and interior design evolving? Are the boundaries becoming more fluid or more defined? And I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on that.
And I believe we're working more closely together with design, planning, interiors. And let's not forget our MEP friends at BSA.
Yes.
Because I think that's even more important sometimes than what we're doing, to create healthy, successful projects together.
I think it's less about what discipline you're in and more about the team and how to create that best possible outcome. We're definitely working across lines, team-based around projects, less about what discipline you're in. And that even goes, you know, to the whole idea of the one BSA, where we work across locations too. So it's a very fluid endeavor.
So I've been curious just in a general sense, as this stuff has been evolving, are clients starting to ask for different things, different deliverables, different processes that they may not have been before?
Yeah. In recent conversations, the client has started talking about us like, what are you doing with AI? And we're like, well, what are you doing with AI? So these conversations, and it's been very interesting. And it goes back to, well, we as architects usually ask, well, what should we build? But they're asking what data you should start, like asking before, like volumes, when with AI you can process more. So like, talking about operational flow data, like that average and variance length and stays, transfer between units, bottleneck indicators of units with chronic overcapacity or staffing pinch points, or behavior patterns, where the staff are walking the most, or where patients wait for instructions or meds or transport. And like, but then there's those outliners of, well, what happens on a bad day, or if a bunch of people are sick, or what if it breaks during a surge or something? And it's not replacing design thinking. It's like supercharging it to be more than what it was before. So if they're not asking for different, we want to be asking for different for sure.
Right. It's a good word, supercharging. I like that.
One thing we're noticing is that's a trend for the look and feel side of the fence is we have clients that have been giving us renderings, imagery that they say, this is what we want.
Oh, yeah.
Give us this. And that's all AI generated. So, you know, helping them understand that we can't take this image that was AI generated and make it real. It's deeper than that. So
right.
Helping them understand that, you know, all the things that Jeff just talked about, we need to understand in addition to that look and feel. So there's so much put into one image that you have to unpack. But I think the clients have started to think that it's just very easy for us to get from point A to point B. And it doesn't take us any time. Look, we just generated this as a rendering off of AI. And I think there's just some education there as well to get everybody on the same page about how we go through that design process so that it makes sense. And it's not just a snapshot in time.
So maybe this changes my next question a little bit. I was going to ask you both how you help clients understand what's possible that wasn't necessarily possible before or that they didn't think of. You're also telling me, though, that they're bringing things to you and you're almost telling them that's not entirely possible. So maybe from both sides of the conversation, how are you helping clients understand what is and what isn't available to them?
Yeah, I mean, with me, it's from that data to design decisions is a big part because they're investing so much in their analytics platform or bed monitoring software mm-hmm. and what limits performance to get them out. So their tools are super powerful, but they'll stop short of answering like critical questions that we might ask. Yep. Like what changes in the physical environments can improve those outcomes? So mm-hmm. we can add value by interpreting that messy operational data, layering data with spatial logic. Mm-hmm. And then like with Jen, how she does like translating insight into action. So we can really like work together to give them confidence that making better decisions earlier can create their built environment that could be a strategic advantage for them to gain more revenue.
I like that.
I think Jeff's spot on about the idea of that next step, how that translates into the built environment. And that's what we're here to help do. And, you know, it's not that it can't be done. It's almost more like, should it be done? And to what extent should it be done? And I think, you know, all of those operational things that we're looking at are super important. And those are almost those known things that we should be doing all the time on every project. And then advancing it to that next step. Well, what's next? What's next? And then thinking through how does that end up looking and feeling when you're in the space.
Right.
So not that it can't be done, but I think we just need to be smart about it and helping us understand holistically what it takes to do good design.
So Jeff, with all this technological evolution, what aspects of design to you remain fundamentally human and are irreplaceable?
Well, earlier I said AI is going to solve all our problems. Mm-hmm. But I still really think people always want to have the human in the loop. So just a recent story that I heard about, a healthcare system installed a bed monitoring system, mm-hmm. and it's for prevent falls or predictive of when a fall might happen or if a patient's like not feeling the best. So the first week of using the system, and they had to install servers and they had to cameras and radar. In the first week, it didn't pick up any activity of a patient moving, getting up or anything.
Hmm.
But falls kept coming in like to the nurse station or people kept on requesting things. So after all the money they spent and after reviewing the information in a human sense, what they found out that the gown color and the bed sheets were the same color. So it wasn't picking up anything. So it's sort of like a green screen happened. So that was, the AI was saying everything's fine, but the human won when they said, well, they're not picking it up because the gowns and the sheets are matching. So you can't tell when a patient's there or not there. So I think that's where humans can win and that kind of stuff as well.
Interesting. Jen, kind of a similar but different question. Where do you draw the line on what technology should and shouldn't do in the design process?
I think that what it helps us do is make some of those experiential, softer side type of things more data driven. Mm-hmm. I think we can link those two outcomes more effectively. I think that there's still a whole side of it that we need to go through in terms of the design process where people are involved and where we think through what that human being is going to experience in the space. So I think it's a both.
Yeah.
I think technology should be used, but we need to use it with our discernment and helping us get to the outcomes that we want from a human perspective.
And then along the lines of, we keep talking about this as like an evolving thing with AI, what skills are you guys seeing that are becoming more important, or what skills are becoming maybe less critical?
I mean, we're working on a BSA AI and automation adoption ladder with Tim Bashi, but really at the top of that sort of piece is client strategy and visioning shaping.
Right.
And that national expertise tool sort of on the sweet spot of the top right-hand corner, if you're sort of seeing a angled line on a graph. Yeah. But really at the base of it, that is like Copilot for emailing or file search or yeah, sort of that daily day routine. So it's the risk, but also the degree of information needed for judgment. So more to come on that, but it's that client strategy, and BSA is very grateful to have so many great clients, but it's also that vision shaping of what's next.
I still think that the communication skills, person-to-person mm-hmm. communication skills, if we can't talk to our client effectively, if we can't sell to our client effectively, you know, that's basic, right? We aren't going to get to that next level. So we've been having some conversations about some of the things you might call soft skills
yep.
internally that can help us level up so that we can have those conversations with our great clients about what's next.
So then what kind of conversations should the industry at large be having that we're not having yet?
I mean, I'm just tied it into, like, instead of asking what are your project volumes, start asking different harder questions, like where does it slow down and why? What decisions delay discharge? Where does staffing spend time waiting instead of caring? And like handoffs, which fall most often? So it's just a different framework of asking questions
uh-huh.
to really get set in the right direction of what we're doing. And then you can map it spatially. So I think that spatial mapping of different questions rather than the same ones we've been doing for quite a long time.
Let's wrap up with this question. So pretend we're back here in 3 years. It's January of 2029. And over the next few years, what do you think the biggest shift in design practice will be between then and now?
Well, I think there's still going to continue to be automation of tasks, documentation, yep. production, specifications, QA, QC, all those kinds of things that allow us to have more time to think about design and generate design. And then, you know, which I think still goes back to the fact that we need to understand the tools, understand what the tools are for, and use them in the way that they're meant to be used.
In the future, I think agentic AI will help us perform and complete a lot of the processes that we're doing. Humans always going to be in the loop, but even, I mean, healthcare has been where I've spent most of my life. So that virtual nurse or a virtual doctor that people are saying that coming, mm-hmm. what does that mean to the spaces we're going to design as well? And that co-intelligence that they have, but also that co-intelligence we have. So there's tons of safety in healthcare and how, when people directly interact with patients. So the LLMs are not there yet, but I think in the future they will be.
Right.
And it's going to change how we do everything, I think, in the next 3 years.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll have to have you both back on, hopefully long before then, too, to talk about other topics. But maybe that's a good follow-up for us. Thank you both so much for coming on and talking about this topic. I found it really fascinating. Great conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Jeff and Jen again for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with them each on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website, bsadesign.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. And be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to check out BSA on social media, including LinkedIn and YouTube. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.